Welcome once again to another fantastic episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. My name is Adam Homey. I am your host, and I am honored by your wise decision to tune in and invest in yourself today. We help you win at the game of business and marketing so you can thrive from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion. Please be sure to check out our website at businesscreatorsradioshow.com, where you'll see a variety of topics covering a breadth and depth of issues relevant to business creators just like you. Also, check us out on your favorite syndication network. We're on most of them, and make sure you subscribe so you get fresh content delivered to you on a regular basis. Okay, so today we're going to have a very, very interesting topic, and this is about why your lack of self-awareness, if you have a lack of self-awareness, is crushing your career and your business. And this is the topic that I think is not discussed nearly enough, because I think that some of the business coaching out there, some of the leadership coaching, some of the mindset coaching out there doesn't really pay attention to self-awareness, and in some cases even deprecates it, which should not be the case, because if you can't be aware of yourself, how can you be aware of what else is going on? So what we're going to do here is we're going to have a conversation about that, and to guide us through it, I'm very excited to have once again with us, Jason Troy. Jason was on the Business Creators Radio some time ago, and we're excited to have him back. And for those of you who may remember the last time Jason was here, and those of you who are right now leaning in, looking to discover more, Jason Troy is an executive coach who helps managers, executives, and teams to maximize their leadership potential performance, along with building and executing their career blueprint. Jason has in-the-trenches experience helping build a billion-dollar company and working with many Fortune 100 companies. He spent 15 years working in leadership positions in Silicon Valley, working with influential leaders such as Steve Jobs, Reed Hastings, who's Netflix, Mark Cuban, Mark Hurd, who is HP, and many others. Jason is the best-selling author of Social Wealth, which is a how-to guide on building extraordinary business relationships. It sold more than 50,000 copies. And Jason was also a featured speaker at 2017 TEDx Wilmington for his talk on how to get coworkers to like each other. His breakthrough game, Cards Against Mundanity, has been played by more than 10,000 people. And it's been used by major organizations such as Amazon, Ernst & Young, Google, Microsoft, Oracle, PRSA, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, and many others. And folks, I got to tell you that I'm really not sure that I belong here on the Business Creators Radio Show, because I'm really not convinced that my eminence is worthy of being in the same room as this gentleman. But let's give it a shot anyway. Jason, come on in. The weather's fine.
Hey, well, I'm grateful to be here and speaking with you, and you have every right to be here. And so does everyone else, because we're all in this. We're all in this together and learning one step at a time.
All right. So what we'd like to do here, Jason, if you may recall from last time, is we're going to do this again simply because we've had so many new listeners join us over the past year. I know that our core group of listeners has evolved and expanded, and we have a lot of new faces in the audience. So as our listeners know, what we like to do is before we dive in, and we have a lot to discuss about self-awareness and how it could be crushing your career and business, is take a step back. For those who are looking up this Jason Troy, this is spelled T-R-E-U, if you are Googling it, thinking it, going here, what have you, and looking to discover more about him. So, Jason, tell us a little bit more about, from your perspective, your journey, and what brought you to where you are today, your intersection of your brilliance and your passion serving business creators.
Sure. Well, like every other person, it's a very windy road that's had its peaks and many valleys along the way. And I started off going to law school and getting my master's in communications. And then I realized that that just wasn't the direction I wanted to head in. And then I went out to Silicon Valley, and I was very fortunate to go out there during the gold rush. So I got to work with many of the people that you mentioned, Steve Jobs, the CEO of Netflix, the current CEO of Netflix for 6 months, the CEO of HP, many venture capitalists like Kleiner and Kleiner Perkins and the Benchmark and Benchmark Capital, and just many other people that were there at that time, which probably will never happen again, in our lifetime. And so I was fortunate to learn from a lot of leaders and the things they did right, and 99% of the things that didn't go quite as well as planned. And then how do you adjust and move forward from that? And, you know, as I was going through my career, I realized I like working with the people much more than I liked working with the politics. And though I understood it, it really wasn't my passion as much. It was really understanding human behavior and how to get the most out of individuals. And so that led me on my journey to doing coaching and training and doing workshops with, you know, managers, leaders, and employees. And I've done a lot of work in all those areas on everything from, you know, leadership, management, team building and performance, conflict resolution. And obviously a huge piece of that, as we're going to talk today, is self-awareness.
Right. Well, let's start there, because I'm very curious about your take on this, as I'm sure many of our listeners are. How do you define self-awareness, and why does it matter? And once you do that, if you give us some examples of how all that plays out.
Really? Well, I mean, self-awareness is the number one soft skill, right? I mean, I guess you could call it tied with your ability to work with teams, but it's just like teamwork, it's the most underappreciated and most misunderstood soft skill. And it ends up holding people back in a significant fashion, usually for their entire career. And it creates the ceiling on where they're able to go. Because self-awareness is essentially, you know, your thoughts, your beliefs, and your behaviors, right? And they're associated with yourself and how you view yourself internally. And the problem with self-awareness is that 95% of people believe they're self-aware, but only 10 to 15% do. And the numbers are worse for men, right? It's down to 4 to 8% in these studies I've seen, and about 14 to 18% for women. And so that's a huge challenge. And as you go up the ladder, it's even worse, right? There's a study of 5,000 senior executives, and they were asked 20 questions in leadership competencies of how well they communicate, collaborate, explain things, et cetera. And then they had their subordinates answer the same question, how they viewed them. Well, in that category, 90% of the senior executives overestimated their ability significantly, meaning something like 70 to 30 or 80 to 20 in 19 out of the 20 categories. So the problem with that all is that how you view yourself does not match up with reality, and you're not calibrating that and understanding it. And on top of it, the challenge lies that you have blind spots that you're not able to see.
Right, right. You know, and that's interesting is, and I have seen this before. I know a story that I mean, this is from a friend of mine, actually, and who worked for a company, and he had a supervisor he worked with for 4 years. And he said that the most hilarious example is, you know, this supervisor was frequently just out of the loop and didn't have really any understanding of what's going on. And one day his supervisor, when he was getting ready to project yet another major catastrophic issue, said, you know, I'm the most down-to-earth person you ever meet. Like, yeah, okay. And I think what we see, unfortunately, in workplaces is there's a complete disconnect between what some folks in management believe is going on and the perceptions that are coming from the people who work for them, and vice versa. So let's not just, you know, think management as well, because it can work both ways. And a lot of that, I think, comes from self-awareness. And, you know, you've mentioned that you shared a statistic with me before we got started here today in the green room that about 95% of people think they're self-aware, but only 10 to 15% are actually self-aware. So if you could expand upon that, because that's kind of where I was going.
Yeah, well, the problem is your view of reality doesn't match up how other people perceive you. And how things actually operate in the real world, right? So your example is very apropos, right? It's the people that think that they're delivering information clearly and are not. The people that, you know, the executives all the time will say to me, or leaders, oh, I have an open door. And then, and they're convinced it's open. And then I ask them the question, well, how many people actually come in your door? And the answer is zero. And then I'm like, well, it's not really an open door, is it? Because no one's actually coming inside your door, right? And you may think that that's the case, but that's not really what's going on. You're not, it's not matching up the external view. They all think like, oh, well, I'm really approachable, right? Well, that's not the case. And all the research shows the problem is the higher up you go, you live in an echo chamber, because unless you create an atmosphere where people can give you feedback, right, in a way that's safe, and you seek out feedback from other people by asking them questions and not getting defensive, you won't really know what's going on around you, right? That's a huge piece of the puzzle. The second part of it, our brain is organized for survival, not for to thrive, right? Survive, not thrive. And the reason that is set up in caveman days is the reason for fear, right? Fear is a significant component of our existence because back in the day, you know, things would actually kill you, right? I mean, if you got ostracized from the group or there were problems that you would, so your fight or flight part of your brain kicks in and you're unable to see a lot of things that are going on because your emotional brain takes over, right? For your logic. Well, the challenge is with all of that is that if you saw everything that was going on and you were able to actually understand it and perceive it, you'd go crazy with fear. So your brain shuts off a lot of the things that are going on around you to allow you to exist. So that's why people can see everyone else doing wrong things or how they're making the same mistake all the time or going off track, but we can't see ourselves, right? And I'm sure you see that in other people. And so that's your blind spot, right? That's things that are going on. And typically the challenge is these patterns are starting from early on in life. They can start later from some trauma or something that's happened that's had a significant impact on you. But an example that's happened many times is I'll work with someone who is getting their challenge because they're a poor listener, right? They're not listening to people around them. Well, the problem isn't that they don't care or they're not trying or that they're not, you know, investing in ways to try to learn or reminding themselves. It's usually stuck in patterns that are sabotaging their success. And these tend to be things such as you grew up in a family of six kids, and the only way that you could get mom and dad's attention was by yelling over your other siblings, pushing them down, or doing things to get their attention or get them to do things, right? Well, then at that point, you learned that not listening gets you what you want, right? Well, I've had some clients, for instance, that have been in sales, and that actually is helpful. If you don't listen to people's objections and you just actually keep talking many times, you can talk them through something and into buying or purchasing whatever you need at that point, right? And a lot of times you just have to plow through difficult times. Well, that's great, but as you rise up in the rankings, you have to actually listen to people and get their feedback and understand. But if you don't, right, it's going to sabotage your success. So oftentimes we learn early on things that actually help us, but later on are sabotaging it. Well, these patterns have been running billions of times in our head, and we don't even know that they're there. So we don't understand the patterns that are actually going on in the background unconsciously that sabotage your own success. And that is a huge component of self-awareness, is to really do what I call, you know, mini therapy, where you're looking at someone through just that lens and understanding the patterns that aren't serving them anymore.
All right. So listening to what you've shared with us over the past 10 minutes or so, a few themes have emerged that seem to be working together here, one of which is approachability. So going back to our previous question, you mentioned that many people in leadership positions will say, I have an open door policy, and they may think that their door is open because their door is physically open. But that's the same. That's a lot different than people actually feeling that they could just knock on the door and go in, or even go up to their administrative assistant and say, "Hey, is Jason in?" And be told they can just go right in, or be told to come back and see Jason at 2:30, what have you. So there's a difference between saying the door is open and actually being able to walk in. Then we have programming. What happened when we were being raised? What's happened in previous areas of our life? So if you come from a family with a lot of siblings, you have to be the greasy wheel the squeaky wheel if you want to get greased, so to speak. And then the patterns that we develop just as a result of what else happens and how we go through life and the experiences we have. So I'd like to go back to approachability for a minute. You know, you asked that very good question of, well, your door is open, but is anybody actually walking in? So what do you think, in your experience, what are some things you've seen leaders do, and also maybe, if applicable, what you've seen the people who are being led do that creates a lack of approachability, just without perhaps even not even realizing, perhaps some little thing?
Well, I think part of it is that they know, well, a couple things. One is they're not creating a psychologically safe environment. And that's where people can feel like they can speak up, they can dissent, they can take a counter opinion to you, they can be in the minority of raising issues, right? And it's okay. And in fact, it's encouraged that people do that, right? Because people always talk about, oh, we want diversity and diverse teams. Well, really, they don't. They want an echo chamber where people actually just repeat what they think and say and then confirm it, right? Like confirmation bias. And that's the challenge, because if you want diversity of opinion, you have to have a psychologically safe environment to encourage people to speak up. Otherwise, what happens, in which I've been doing a lot more work in, is team conflicts, right? In high-performing teams where people just aren't getting along because they can't take a viewpoint that's different than anyone else. And that's a huge piece of it, right? The other piece is they're not going in and asking people opinion and managing their relationships and asking questions such as, how would you rate our relationship on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being poor, 10 being great? Why did you rate that, and how could I move it closer to a 10, right? If leaders and managers asked the people that they were managing that, they would get feedback, right? And they'd be able to calibrate. I think the other part of it is they're not seeking out other people and asking opinion on, okay, what are things I'm doing well right now, what are the things I should be doing more of or less of, right? Questions like that, and seeking out people and getting that honest feedback from people that they're managing, people that are their colleagues, people that they work with externally outside that organization, people even potentially in their personal life, right? To understand what's going on, because they need feedback from somewhere, right? Otherwise, you start to imagine in your own head all the scenarios that are going on, right? And we all know that if we talk to the voices in our head, you know, not good things happen, because that's not reality. I mean, we're not our best sounding board. I mean, that's correct. Why you join masterminds, or why you join support groups or whatever you do, is to get external feedback to validate what's going on, or to challenge your own opinions, right? And to seek things that you don't understand. So I think if you start to create environments where you create psychological safety, where you start to ask people where you're managing more of how they perceive you to manage your relationships, right? And then just general seek feedback on the things you're doing well, the things that you're not, things that you should be doing, how you can help other people. You'll learn a lot more about what's going on. And then what happens is people will come to you, right, and give you information and share things with you because they feel safe, they feel heard, and they feel like they're going to act on the information, so it's worth their time to do it. Because a lot of times, right, if you're going to step up and give, you know, share difficult information or challenging information – a lot of people live in fear that they could be fired, that it could hurt their career advancement. So, So that fear is really prevalent out there. And I talk to a lot of people, and most people are working in environments where they feel like it really doesn't work. Gartner had a study they published, a little while ago, that in billion-dollar organizations, the average employee would have to see a $100,000 problem or more before they'd speak up, right? If they saw a $90,000 problem every single day, they wouldn't say anything because they didn't feel like it was enough money to warrant it and no one would actually listen to them, which is pretty sad, right? I mean, and this is, this is what goes on in organizations today and how leaders propagate and really exacerbate the communication problem.
Yeah, I think you raised a lot of good points here. And one thing that I noticed is a theme that there's fear. And part of that comes from a fear of being seen as weak. So if I'm a leader and I were to ask the people I lead for feedback, then, wait, what does that say about me as a leader? I should just know this because I'm the leader, right? I'm the head of this thing. I'm the one that's supposed to be coaching them, not vice versa. And some of that can go back to some of our childhood programming where the whole thing of, don't ever appear weak because people will exploit that. Well, there's a way, in my estimation, that when you position that properly, that actually puts you in a position of strength rather than weakness.
Yes.
But that's just not something that's frequently taught and not something that's frequently covered.
Yeah, I mean, vulnerability is something Brené Brown talks about. And the thing about vulnerability is it shows people that you're not perfect, and they know you're not, and you know that they're not. And when you're being honest with people, they will work harder, they will put in more effort, they'll make more suggestions, because that just matches their reality and what goes on in life, right? But if you set up something where people have to be perfect and you have to have all the answers, well, then someone's not. But the reality is, great managers are made, they're not born. And if you think the opposite, if you're just magically good at this, well, you're wrong, and you're completely wrong. I mean, sure, do people have some innate skills? Yes. But I found there's no one that has all the skill sets to be a great leader ever. You have to develop these and figure these out. And when you talk to leaders who are great leaders overall, all these processes and other things they've learned from trying things and didn't work, talking to other people, right, copying other people's processes and learning from them and doing it, they haven't thought about all these things up originally from themselves. They haven't learned it. They're not living in some echo chamber or, have some epiphany that no one else has. So if you treat people like that, well, then they're not going to communicate with you in that fashion. And all the leaders I've seen that have been vulnerable and been honest and spoken the truth and done a lot of the things we're talking about today, those are the people that get the best results, have the highest performing teams, and frankly have companies that make the most money and profit. And the rest just don't do near as well.
Yeah. So what we already touched upon is patterns. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to get a little bit deeper into that because, as you and I discussed, one of the key concepts in understanding self-awareness is, in fact, pattern recognition and understanding your historical patterns and how they affect you today. So I'd like to go a little bit more into that because I've done that study with a couple of my clients, actually, one of whom this is somebody who's a client of ours for a while, specializes in resonance repatterning, and then we have another that deals with family historical repatterning. And I can give some examples of that as well, but how do we come to understand and how do we reach that breakthrough that some of it has to do with historical patterns? Because that's something that one may have challenges seeing if they're looking outward.
Yeah, and I think a lot of this stuff, there's a level of that you can do this work on your own, but the challenge is you do need the help of other people to help you view it and matching it. Doing your own self-inquiry and digging is important, right? And you should be asking yourself questions so you can understand how you viewed yourself. That way, when you get other data and information and asking other people, you can see if it matches up or not, and you can see it written down. But when I'm looking at patterns with clients and trying to figure it out, I need to really understand and dig down, and I call it really anatomy, you know, transformation, and trying to figure out how it is that they're arriving at where they're currently at. Because if you have an employee come in, right, into your office, and let's just take the listening challenge again, right, and they come in, and you might have employee A who has that problem, right, and you give them information, and they take it, turn on it, and become a better listener, and then employee B doesn't, right? Well, the challenge is you've got to figure out, is it a knowledge problem? Is it a knowledge gap that they're still not getting it? Is it a pattern problem? Is it that they don't care, right? Or is it because there's some personal problem outside of work that's really getting in their way? Well, I found most of the time it's not a knowledge problem, it's a pattern problem. And so a simple example to try to go through quickly would be a New Year's resolution, right? Because everyone knows what that is and has seen that and probably made them themselves, right? And most people making it, like the data I saw is 70% of people making New Year's resolution don't keep it. That's probably a lot higher, but the only data I've ever seen. And so what happens is you want to change your behavior, right? Maybe you want to get in better shape. Well, it's not really that complex, right? It's exercising more and eating healthier. Well, the challenge is if you go at a behavioral level, sure, some people can do that, right? But it's brute force. You're essentially just going and working out a lot more and then eating better. Well, there are people that can do that, right? But whatever you can do at a brute force level in one area, you can't do in the rest of them. You'll see people who can go to the gym all the time, but the rest of their life isn't in very good shape. Well, the next layer down is a story level. And the story is the external stories that you have about the world around you, right? There are things like, well, the problem is I can't get in better shape and I can't do this because I don't have time to eat well. You know, my family's making all these demands on me. I don't have time to exercise. So it's looking at the external world and creating stories and false narratives that try to explain away what's going on and offload blame. Well, when we understand what those stories are, we can dig at the emotional level, and then that's the next level down, and the negative emotions are feeling, right? Whatever those are, right? They could be sadness, they could be shame, they could be guilt, whatever they are. And the issue there is we often shut down our emotions and we don't listen, and those are our early warning system that something's going wrong and we need to dig deeper. They might not necessarily tell us anything per se, but they'll tell us that there's something challenging going on. And it does start to make linkages between the stories and the emotions. And the level below that is the limiting beliefs. And a limiting belief is really powerful because a belief is absolute certainty in something. And they usually come in two forms. One is I'm not enough of something, right? I'm not smart enough. I'm not great enough. Right. I'm not whatever it is, right? And the other one is who do I think I am? Essentially imposter syndrome, right? Like who do I think I am that I can lose weight or get in better shape, right? Well, those sabotage our success, and we implement them in our blueprint by going over in our head, you know, again, billions and billions of times, both of those things, right? So all of this stuff, right, is why we can't just brute force go in and do your New Year's resolution. Well, then below that, the final level is our childhood modeling, right, that where we learn from a child, we're a whiteboard, and we learn, you know, accept and model behavior that we learn from our parents or people that are close to us, right? And they're all well-meaning and trying to teach us the best they can, but like everyone else, they're imperfectly perfect, right? They do the best that they can, but that also leaves as many challenges, right, that they have and that we accept as true. And, you know, again, there's other trauma and other things that also can go into all of these things for individuals, right? But that's when you understand how people go down the stack, right, from the behavior to the story, the emotion, the limiting beliefs, to the childhood modeling and any trauma that they have, you can then reverse engineer it back up for people. And that's really how you start to diagnose this really quickly and start to look for patterns and understand what's really holding someone back, right? Like what's really causing it, right? Like what's the first time you've ever felt like you weren't enough, right? And you felt shame. Well, someone's going to give you an answer at some point in their life, and it doesn't necessarily have to be the first time, but whatever it is, you can start to link and ask questions around it, and it will help you understand why whatever they're doing is significantly challenged and they're stuck. And if you don't get over that, then the problem is that whole issue is causing you problems in all these other areas in your life. It's not just in New Year's resolution. It's managing other people, dealing with things, right? It's creating the ceiling in your life until you can get through and understand, how do I solve that challenge? And if you don't, all you're going to keep doing is hitting your head against it every single day, and you're going to wonder why you get so many peaks and valleys in your life, right? It's the self-awareness issue, right? It's not the other abilities that you have and gifts.
Yeah. And once again, there's a couple things that jumped out at me. Like, when you went through the anatomy of change, the five levels, and you get to the fourth level, which is the limiting beliefs we have about ourselves. And the second limiting belief is, who do I think I am? Which drives to imposter syndrome. Well, here's what jumps out at me when people bring this model up. And I've seen models somewhat similar to this that bring up the issue of, you ask yourself, who do I think I am, and how that ties to imposter syndrome. Well, think about how many times we've had people say that. Who do you think you are?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Boy, if most of us didn't hear that one a lot, especially growing up, like, who do you think you are that you can X, Y, or Z? And a lot of times that question comes up when somebody sets a bold intention or an audacious goal.
Yes.
Particularly a bold intention or an audacious goal that falls outside of somebody else's expectation for that person. I used to just crack myself up internally growing up myself when people would say to me, we have big plans for you. Like, what about my plans for me? It's got nothing to do with you. And then they wondered why I didn't communicate and didn't share my feelings and thoughts with people. Well, there you have it right there. So we're going a little bit beyond imposter syndrome, and it did give me a pretty bad case of imposter syndrome. That is something I'm not even completely cured, but I'm at the point where I'm at least aware of it, so that when I see it emerging, I know what to do about it. And here's another thing I like to share, Jason, if you'll allow me, and this goes back to the idea of pattern recognition, historical patterns, and how some of our behaviors are driven by how we were raised. And in some cases, it's our parents, our guardians, our elders, who are doing the best they can with the knowledge they have and not even realizing they themselves may be handing down a pattern. I've come up with this a lot when working with clients, one client in particular, who deals with helping people overcome eating disorders, such as junk food addiction, such as chronic overeating, things of that variety. And I've noticed in myself some things that once I was able to notice these, it made a big impact on my dietary lifestyle, my intake, and I actually ended up losing some weight just because I noticed this. Is, did you ever go to grandma's house and she made her famous lasagna? Let's just go with that example. So you take one piece of lasagna and you eat it and you enjoy it. And that's enough. But then she tries to give you a second piece, but that's enough. And when you don't accept the second piece, she takes it personally, like you're insulting her lasagna. No, you just only needed one piece. Well, without belaboring the next half hour over that point, part of what may be going on is grandma may remember a time when there was no lasagna available, when they were basically eating grain.
Yes.
Think the Great Depression. So grandma's supposed, you know, feelings of umbrage may actually be her fear that you may starve. The same reason when you go to relatives' houses and they try and fly leftovers upon you, it's because they feel if you don't take the leftovers, they haven't done their job to make sure they feed you. And they're afraid that when you go home, you're not going to have any food and you're going to starve. they may not themselves realize that that's what's driving that behavior, but in at least 8.5 out of 10 times, that's what it is.
Survival patterns. What you said is what happens in human beings. So what happens in an organization, for instance, is that people feel like, oh, if I raise this issue and I talk to my boss and it's not safe, I could get fired. Well, if I get fired, then I lose my income. If I go home, my family loses their house. They'll get kicked out on the street. We won't be able to buy food. We'll all starve and we'll die, right? I mean, and that goes unconsciously in people's minds. And they don't even know that it's happening, but it's a survival pattern in our fight or flight brain that's gone back to caveman days. Because back then, if you got kicked out of the group, you actually would die, right? You'd physically die. So that is that they've traced that back to people in corporate America making decisions on whether to step up or not. The fear is exactly survival. It's not just getting fired itself. It's the repercussions and playing out the worst scenario that happens unconsciously in our brain unless we move it to the forefront and we understand what's going on, right? Or we're in an environment where that doesn't kick in, which is the preferable way, obviously, to operate, because otherwise you're getting people to not share things, right? But we have to understand, like your grandmother's example, that people are run by patterns in their unconscious mind. Like, we are very aware of very few of our own thoughts every day, right? And that's the problem. We need to be more aware to understand what's going in, because when people talk down to themselves, right, or say negative things, and everyone's like, oh, you're this, you're not really that, right, even in a positive way. And if they're negative self-talk, there's a reason why that person feels like they're not good enough. And you telling them stuff, of course, you know, that can be helpful, but it's not going to really help them because they're solidifying that belief in their head over and over again, right? So these patterns cause us great pain and issues because it's our self-awareness. And there are blind spots that we solidify and just unconsciously run in the background, like our operating system, right, that we're not aware of.
Very true. Very true. And going along with that is the word just, which to me is one of the most unjust words out there, especially when used in the frame of, well, you're just the, or you're just the, or something along those lines, saying that there's, and what that does, that really implies a feeling that you just go this far and then there's nothing else for you. That beyond this limit that we're setting upon you, you don't matter.
Yes, and that, again, is, you know, the reality is every person listening to this is limitless, right? I mean, and the fact is, if you don't, if you feel that's not true, or that we're, you know, not like lying or whatever to you, or that, you know, you're just not as powerful as the person down the street or next door or in the other cubicle or in that office, like, that's just not true, right? You feel like that, but that's not reality. And that is your self-imposed prison at this point, and you need to let yourself out because you have the key, and the key is your self-awareness, right, and along with emotional intelligence. But you have to do it, right? And if you don't take the first step, it won't happen. And that's why self-awareness is so key, because change happens from the inside out. And like you said in the beginning, the problem when I go to my clients, because I used to do the opposite. I used to just go into, here's leadership, management, relationship building skills. And then I found that I was getting uneven results. And the reality was, is it wasn't them, it was me. And that I wasn't taking time to look at the patterns that were causing them problems when they were dealing with their other issues. And then when I stopped and didn't go immediately to solving this problem, but took a step backwards and started with them, then what happened is all these issues just went away, right? Because it's the root cause. And I didn't have to do all this extra work to do all these other issues because they just melted away. Because the problem, the listening, then got everyone more inspired when they started to do it. And then a lot of these other problems just went away without them doing it. And that was the root cause, right? of people's engagement, of them coming and telling them stuff. They just didn't think that they cared, but that wasn't the case. They just had a pattern where they weren't listening because that's what they learned early on. But all the other things just stemmed out of it, right? So that becomes a problem, is that what goes on in our head creates our external reality, right? If you go and look at someone and you say, wow, they're trying hard, and I tribute, things of that nature, right? Like, they're not trying to undermine me. They're just doing the best they can. Perhaps they don't have knowledge. Well, it's the same way, right? Because why not do that rather than saying negative intent, like they're trying to sabotage me and they're trying to out to get me, which happens all the time, right? And then you distrust people. Well, that's a self-awareness issue as well, right? Because you're starting to dream up things that aren't really there, instead of asking people, right? That's the other problem that starts to happen, is in these things, I'll deal with conflicts where people will be thinking things, right? They'll be sitting in a meeting. An example would be, you're sitting in a meeting and a leader asks a question, and a person answers the question, and then someone across the table looks at them and rolls their eyes. Well, that person will think, well, that person doesn't like me, that person's thinking negatively about me, or something about them bothers me. Well, they never confront that other person. They never talk to them. They never sit down and pull them aside privately and say, hey, the story in my head I'm making up is you rolled your eyes, and maybe that's because you don't like me or something's going on, and I just really want to talk to you about it because I value the relationship I have with you. Well, if they did that, the problem would end. But the issue is that goes on for 18 or 24 months, sabotages the team, their success, causes all these problems, and then we finally get down to the root cause of what's going on, right? Well, that all, again, goes down to self-awareness and coming up with stories and false narratives that occur.
Right, right, exactly. You know, there's a story that I've told a number of times that I'm looking at in a new way just based on everything that you've shared with me. Now, I'm going to anonymize this. So I'm gonna tell you about a colleague of mine, and we're gonna say that her name is Sally Wilkins. We'll give her that name, Sally Wilkins, right? And she used to work, and she worked for a company before she became an entrepreneur. And at one point, I guess something that Sally said or something that Sally did caused some other middle manager from some other department to go to Sally's supervisor and complain about it. And this manager from this other department went out of their way to say to Sally's supervisor and remind Sally where she is on the org chart, what she needs to be saying, and what she needs to be just keeping her mouth shut and her head down. And what happened is Sally's supervisor told Sally the whole conversation, not just that something had been reported, but how this other supervisor had been so intent on Sally being reminded where she actually stood in the organizational chart. So fast forward to maybe 5 years later, and Sally has left that company. She now has her own business. She has a company where she's not only chief cook, bottle washer, and everything else, but she's also CEO and president and minister of finance and everything else. The same supervisors in this other department happens to walk into the same Starbucks where Sally is enjoying her latte while she's working on her laptop doing her nomad lifestyle thing. And this same supervisor who's gone to Sally's supervisor to have Sally reminded what her work was comes up to her and says, oh, Sally, oh, goodness, how are you? And Sally said, you will refer to me as Miss Wilkins or ma'am. I'm a president or a CEO. There's only one person in your company who gets to call me Sally. Now walk.
Yep.
I'm looking at that in a new way because we see the themes, and I'm seeing themes in that story that I've not seen the same way up until now, where there are so many patterns that everybody acting in this conversation might not be aware of that ultimately led to a confrontation in a coffee shop where somebody who had attempted to have somebody put in their place was told that they don't have a place, that they don't even get to address somebody by their first name.
Yeah, this is how this all has a life of its own and just continues on and continues on. And the challenge is that we don't learn how to manage our self-awareness and then how to actually ask for feedback and engage with others in a way, in a safe way, that we can bring up topics or other information that are sensitive and just talk about it, right, without having some formulaic response or having it perfect or worried if we don't say it exactly in the right way that it's going to be held against us, right? And if you don't connect both of those dots, you now have a situation like the one you're explaining, right, where none of that should have happened. And it
right.
consumes so much time and energy of people's lives. Like, I'm doing quite a few teams in conflict, and I figured out an average right now after going back and doing some math is that on a team of five people that are in conflict, that are a high-performing team, right, you're probably wasting anywhere between 225 and 275 hours a month in conflict and dealing with emotional
right.
turmoil and miscommunicating. I mean, you realize how much time and lost productivity that is, right? And not all that's going to translate back to the bottom line, but a lot of it will, right? And the long-term damage that that does as well individually, like outside of work, that's massive, right? We're talking about like 3,500 hours for that team a year. I mean, imagine what they could do in that time. How much more money they can make. I mean, and that's a team of five, right? We're not talking about an organization, right? So I just think that all the stuff you're bringing up is just really apropos. And the story is, because 5 years later, look where they're at. Is that really where we all want to be at?
Right. So we have so as we move towards the end here, I mean, again, this has been a phenomenal conversation. I really appreciate you taking the time to spend with us today, Jason. You know, we covered the anatomy of change, the five levels of the anatomy of change, and all these different strategies that we could take. And I appreciate you listening to my story about Sally's experience. And you think this all started because some mid-level supervisor felt in some way threatened by Sally's very existence, that they had to go to Sally's supervisor to have Sally reminded where she belongs on an org chart. And you said, and then this gets back to Sally, who then years later remembers how she was insulted and sees this person in the coffee shop and says, wait a minute, you tried to tell me that I was worthless? Now, well, look at me, I'm a CEO now, and you're still a mid-manager of some company. Screw you, and I'm going to let you know. So all the energy that was wasted on the part of all those folks and all the triggers in all of them, all the way across the board, and how that impacted them based on patterns. So what else can we do? I know you have a few other recommendations for what else we can do to help people have more self-awareness and so that they can exceed in their business and exceed in their career. What are some other things we can do, Jason?
Well, I think one is you can stop asking what questions, right? Like, and ask more like, what's going on here, right? Like, why am I in this position? Or actually, sorry, more what questions rather than why, right? Like, why is it so bad? I think, what can I do, right? Because that empowers you, because now you're looking for answers rather than blame or reasons that you're in the predicament that you are, right? Because that goes to emotional
yeah.
stuff and, you know, bottling up and then blaming others rather than looking at what's really the root cause? Like, why am I really this angry at this person, right? And starting
Correct.
To dial it back up. And I think that those are things that are super important. And the other thing is to do more, you know, calibration, right, of understanding about how is our inner world matching up with our external world, right? And what I would do is I could seek out probably 5 to 7 people, because I think you need enough people to actually make sure that there's patterns and look back at the information. And you can ask, you know, people questions like, you know, what opportunities do you see for me to do more of what I do well, right? what do you think are the biggest things holding me back from having a greater impact, right? What skills do you think a person like me hypothetically should have, and what should you work on, right? And you can even ask a question, well, how would you rate me on a scale of 1 to 5 for those skill sets, right? You know, you can ask a question like saying, what's one thing that you see that if I don't change will really hold me back for the rest of my career? And you just need to tell people, look, I need to have the honest answers because I don't know. And I'm living in an echo chamber, and I need you to be brutally honest with me. And I'd be really grateful if you shared this information with me, because the only way I can get better, right? And that is better than any 360 review, because the problem a lot of times when you do 360 reviews, and I see thousands of these I've seen, you know, very few times that they help people, because people get defensive. Right? Because someone else is collecting the data and handing it to them. And then what happens is, right, you're handed this booklet of information, and it goes into our emotional brain, right? Our fight or flight. And what happens? We offload the blame. We make excuses. We don't read it, right? But if you self-collect it, you're the one driving it. So it comes from your intellect. So you do look at it, and you will drive it, right? Because it's driven by you and not some form that's sent to other people. And frankly, most of those people, unless you set up a psychologically safe environment, probably won't be giving you the real feedback anyways, because they're fearful you're going to figure out who they are, and you're going to seek them out and go after them, right? So they don't have any incentive to help you, because they're worried about – they're living in their own fear, which we talked a lot about today, and survival patterns and everything else, right? So that's – those two things will start to help you significantly, right? And then I think looking through – and running up and down the anatomy of change and really looking at, okay, well, when's the first time I felt like all of these things? When you reach the bottom, and you're going to start to really see something, right? Well, I felt like that when I was in grade school and I wasn't enough, and a teacher asked me a question and they rolled their eyes and whatever, right? Why? Because I felt stupid. I felt marginalized. I felt dumb when someone made fun. Well, that helps you, right? Because now you know whatever's going on stems back from that. And that you didn't feel like you're enough. So now you've got to do things to make sure you are, right? And you've got to tell people that.
Yeah. And again, that really goes back to the awareness issue. What I thought of, especially when you do these 360 reviews, which is a concept I've been familiar with for going on 20 years now, is let's say you have, and you're starting to see more and more of this in corporations today, where you have a department where there's only one person who's not a supervisor. How do you think that person's going to feel rating their supervisor, knowing that they don't have even the opportunity to be candid, knowing that the supervisor won't be left with seeing all this quote-unquote constructive, well, actually negative feedback, and know exactly who said it?
Yeah, it doesn't – exactly. And on top of that, of the several teams I'm doing conflict work right now with, all of them did 360s, and none of them worked, right? In fact, it actually exacerbated the problem, because now everyone knew the feedback, and no one really did anything with it or discussed it, because rarely is it implemented and followed up and people are accountable for it. Because they get too busy, or their managers do, or everyone else, and they're sort of thrown by the wayside, and no one uses it. It's an expensive exercise that I've seen very rarely work, right? I mean, in single-digit percentage organizations, most of them, it's all just a waste of time.
Wow, that's pretty low.
It's not like if they worked, that would be one thing, but all the teams I'm having have done them, right? It's not like they're sitting around and not aware of the issues, and people are telling them, but they're actually not the right ones, right? They misdiagnose it, and they're not digging deeper, right? Because because it's all a bunch of stories. All that does the 360 a lot of times is it says, right, Adam, I have a problem with you, right? Well, what's the real I may say to you, boy, you're not working hard enough, but really, is that really the problem? No, it's the problem that I think that you're judging me because you don't think I'm good enough. Well, that doesn't show up in the 360 review, right? It requires someone to go in and have a conversation with you two, most likely, and help you understand that that's the root cause of it. You're seeing the leaf on the tree in the 360 reviews. You're not seeing the root cause. So it requires someone to be really in a coaching methodology for you to actually use it successfully. Someone that knows both of you to see it and help you through it. Otherwise, what happens is it's not accurate and it's not actionable. And all it does is it causes more problems and more distrust. And this is what I've seen, right?
Right.
It actually raises it dramatically, in fact. Because now someone sees what you put down about them. They know it, right? And most teams are pretty small. They're not massive, and they know the people that are writing negative things to begin with because they're having conflicts with them. And if not,
right. They're
attributing that information to them anyways, even if it wasn't them. They don't even ask and seek it out, right? They're just assuming that data is from there. So this is helpful for people because this is how your mind works, right? You collect the evidence to support your opinion and your biases, right? And that's what goes on. And you prove your supposition correct. And you don't see any of the other evidence that could dissuade you from it. You just collect it like a lawyer in a courtroom before a judge.
Correct. So with all that being said, you know, we're right near the top of the hour. I just wanted to express, first of all, Jason Troy, my appreciation to you for coming back and sharing this very, very important information. And I trust that through our conversation today, we've helped some people recognize the many ways that lack of self-awareness could be getting in the way. Now, if somebody is now feeling themselves a bit more aware of what's going on and prepared to take that next step, how can you help our business creators do so?
Well, you know, I have my own coaching, training, and workshops that I perform or help people with either individually in groups or organizationally. And then, you know, you also have my game Cards Against Mundanity that, you know, is a free game that you can download. And actually, I've just launched the actual physical playing cards a few weeks ago. So those are other options as well. And you can go to my website, jasontreu.com, and get all the information and data and contact me.
Awesome. Well, I want to, again, thank you very much and tell people to go to that website. It's cardsagainstmundanity.com and check out those playing cards because they're pretty interesting. And also be sure to check out Jason's website, which is jasontreu.com, and Troy is spelled T-R-E-U. So jasontreu.com. And you'll be able to discover more about some of Jason's work, including the Cards Against Mundanity, his work with team building, and some of the same topics we covered here today. Jason, once again, our appreciation. It's been an honor and an education.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me on the show.
And for everybody listening, this is Adam Homey, host of the Business Creators Radio Show. Please check out our previous and our upcoming episodes at www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com, where we help you win. It's a game of business and marketing, so you thrive from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion. Until next time, have a great day. Take care.